Give me a minute to get all the gadgets lined out. The last time I did a presentation was a whole lot simpler than this. I had a slide projector and one button. And technology has left me behind. And I'm slow catching up. But anyway, give me a break. I'll do my best. I want to apologize first for the delay. I know it's been a year, but life's been busy. A lot going on. Every time I thought we were going to do this, there again, something else came up. And I think you all understand and know some of the issues. But anyway, that's not neither here nor there. As I want to approach you with our Panama mission, I want you all to think about what a mission really means. From the day we come out of that watery grave, our life set on a path. And that is a mission. What we do in the Lord's service, how we treat other individuals, the path our life takes is a mission. A lot of years I didn't understand that. But, you know, sometimes you have to have a wake-up call. And I've been there, done that. And something else I want to mention, Jack got me all excited about this work. When Jack found out I was retiring from Paul Mueller Company, he recruited me. He said, "Oh man," he says, "I've got to work for you. We're building some security panels for some fencing around our compound down in Panama." And he says, "You can come down and man alive, you can just weld." And he got me excited because it was something I felt comfortable doing. I knew I had 45 years of welding, so what could go wrong? This is carbon steel. It's not rocket science. So I jumped on board with both feet. Boy, this is something. Over the years, and most of you know that Ruth and I have been involved in some mission work in Peru for several years and loved it. And then through health issues and some issues with Ruth's mom and stuff, we kind of got out of the mission field. And I was anxious to kind of have a chance to get back. So Jack recruited me to go to Panama and weld sections of fence. So yes, I jumped on board. And with the love of this congregation, they helped sponsor us to go, which enabled us to go. And that without each and every one of you individuals, our trip would not have been possible. And as Rick, bless his heart, helped me prepare this on the tablet, like I said, and get set up my slides. I watched him work on the computer and was just, yeah, amazed. But anyway, and thank you, Rick, for helping. You know, I've got a passage I want to share with you right now. And 1 Corinthians 12, verse 12. "As even as one body has many members, all the members of the body, though there are many, are one body also in Jesus, in Christ." And, you know, we all have different talents. And that's probably a good thing. We all are our own individuals, and the Lord has blessed us with what we can do and what we can share. But we are all a part of Jesus' body. And then jump on down to verse 27. "And now you are Christ's body and individual members of it." We're all important. There's no not important part of the body. And as we start our mission in life, I realize that not everyone can actually go on a mission trip or are able to or be a part of. There again, because of you all and this congregation, I can say thank you for allowing me to have, and my wife to have, that responsibility and the opportunities to go and be a part of a mission field. I look back at Bob and laugh. When we first started coming here, every year he would go to on a trip, sometimes two. When he would come back, he was always wound up and excited. And his enthusiasm convinced me that I needed to be a part of that. And I hope, my hope and prayer is tonight, that if you haven't been on a trip and you're able, that my excitement will inspire you. Because I understand it's not for everybody, and it's not an easy trip a lot of times. I look around and see some individuals that have been on trips with us, and yeah, it's not a vacation. You give up and sacrifice some things, but you get rewarded with many more. So I just wanted to thank you all for helping Ruth and I go and enjoy this and be a part of the School of Americas and the Children's Home in Panama. When Bob Bryson started this work back in 1958, he had a vision, and it's amazing where this path has led. And, of course, you got a lot of that background information from Jack when he was here. But I'm going to give you a little different lean on it because I'm not the professional speaker that he is. And I know I'm going to make a lot of mistakes tonight, but you all are going to say, "All right, let's just, Terry, let's go on." So anyway, without further ado, I can't begin to appreciate the support from this congregation and the opportunities Ruth and I have had over the years to be a part. The purpose of the School of Americas is to prepare young men to preach the gospel, plain and simple. Valdez figured out a lot of years ago that to bring students to America was a mistake. If you bring them to a United States and they see and enjoy the comforts and see the freedoms that we have in this country, they won't want to go back. I know two or three preachers that right now that have been trained through Latin America that are in the United States right now for that very reason. But if you bring them to Panama, set them up in a two-year school, teach them, bring their families with them, and send them back to their country, they appreciate what they had and what they've learned. And they will go back and fulfill needs that you and I could not fill. So when I talk to you about the School of Americas, the point is reaching out with the gospel. And through our efforts, we're a valuable part of that. And when you see the budget items in our budget, and see the money that's allotted for Latin American missions, I know some of you, wow, that's a lot of money. But I hope tonight, through my presentation, I can share with you and make you understand how much farther and greater in the lives that we touch through our help in that effort. This is the 9 freshmen that came in this last year while we were there in Panama. And I know that you guys that look at numbers and say, "Wait a minute, there's 10 people there." Well, yeah, there is. The one without any books, he's one of the teachers. These young men came in while we were there. We got the privilege of meeting and greeting each one of them individually and meeting their families. And it was a very enjoyable experience. This is a picture of the five students that were returning this year, which just now have graduated. And the staff is on the lower row. Of course, Jack's in the middle. These men on the front row are all an important part of the administration and the teaching of the School of Americas. And through the year, there are several other visiting preachers that come in down there from the United States, from Bear Valley and different places to teach them specific topics. The young man we had for our gospel meeting this last year, Kyle Butts, he was down there. In fact, he was down there after we were down there teaching them on apologetics. So it's far-reaching. These young men get an education that is incredible. And Valdesta, they bring these people in and they pay for all their expenses. You know, and they get allowance, a living allowance, and a food allowance, and they have to make that work. I mean, you know, it's not, and it's based on how big the families are. These are three young men, the first three that we actually met this year. And these young men are all single, from Honduras. And we were sitting at the table one night, and one evening, and Jack goes, "Oh no, he got a phone call." And Honduras has got a conflict with Panama has got a conflict with Honduras. Political conflict of some sort. In other words, to get them into, they were in customs, stuck. I don't know if they had the right paperwork or did not, whatever. But these young men, when we got to talking to them this very evening when they got there, "Well, what do you think?" And they were all pretty well scared. I'm going to say that easy, because they had signed up for 2 years to go to a preaching school and had never left their country. Most of them had seen airplanes, but they'd never been on one. That one young man says, man, when I got on the airplane, I didn't know what to think. And I kind of turned my mind back and remember the first time I got on an airplane, man, when it left the ground. Yeah, it's quite an experience. But these boys are young. They are inexperienced, and they have committed 2 years of their life to learn about the Lord's work and how to preach it and reach out with the good news of the gospel. Jack's on one side, and I call it his second in command, and I can tell you what the other guy's name was, but it probably wouldn't be right, and it wouldn't matter anyway because you all don't know him. So anyway, every night as the students came in, after they got there, one of Ruth's main jobs, by default, she had to cook for us, and we had a meet and greet with the families. Jack would have us around the table. Of course, we kind of sat back. Larry Legan, the white-headed gentleman there in the burgundy shirt, he is from Oklahoma City, and he's bilingual. And so he and Jack would sit and just talk to these individuals and make them feel at home, comfortable. It was a get acquainted. Of course, we were all trying to be courteous and nice and trying to understand. Yeah. Anyway. We hosted all those nine families one night or another, you know, to a meal. And, of course, we had to take pictures and document. Larry Legan standing there next to me and Jane, they, like I said, they're from Oklahoma City. And, of course, Jack and Nancy, his wife, is right behind Ruth. And then the families are in the middle. And this is kind of the inside of one of the apartments, so this is where we stayed. Pretty plain, pretty simple, but clean and livable. And of course, there again, lots of smiles, lots of love. Jane had, they had been on a mission trip earlier in the year and had got acquainted with this young man that Jane's hanging on to. And he did speak some English, so we were able to communicate some. But it was so important for us to be a part of greeting them and making them feel comfortable and welcome. Because, like I said, they have committed their lives for 2 years and their families. I mean, you know, these three young men were like I said, were single, but the rest of them all had kids. And to make that pick up and move from your country and bring, well, not very much with them, you know, to a new land is, to me, pretty scary. This is a drone that flew over, or that they had a copy of, and we were able to download it. So if you would kick that in back there, please. It's kind of an overview of how big this campus is. It's about 25 acres. Ain't technology wonderful? This is what makes me nervous. The slides were easy, you know. If you got one in upside down, it wasn't a big deal. But I always hit the wrong button. But anyway, this is kind of a drone video. And I wanted you all to see this. It was on Valdez's website. And I thought it was pretty unique because it gave you a little bit of an overview of the campus there and how massive, you know, 25 acres is pretty good size. And we have, while we were there, we had actually, Carlos was the main maintenance individual that took care of the campus. I mean, he was responsible for making sure everything worked. And then he had two young men. One of them had lived in the children's home and grew up there. And he worked there at the school. And then Chippo, which I developed a good friendship with, he was also in maintenance. And those three individuals, this is the entrance. And then, like I said, this is just kind of a drone of the area of the campus there. These are some of the apartment buildings and the dormitories. This building in the back is the library and single dorms. This building over here on the other side of the campus is all married dorms. And this, like I said, this was just kind of, this is the children's home. Kids playing, having a good time. Soccer. These kids play soccer all the time. And this playground, I'll have some other pictures of it later. This playground, a gentleman passed away and left them, one of his requests was to redo the playground equipment. This is part of the offices and the classrooms. And like I said, I'll just kind of let this run and then I'll get back. Yeah, that was it. But like most of you know, when Jack told me about building this fence around this compound, their terrain is about like here. It's not flat. This is not Oklahoma or Kansas. It's pretty rugged and pretty rough. And when they talk about building metal fencing, I thought, well, this is going to be a challenge. But anyway, I accepted that. There again, because, yeah, this guy can weld, I can, yeah, that's not a piece of cake. Anyway, this building here is the classroom and the offices for the staff and the students. This is another picture of it. And if you notice the heavy metal doors and then there's a wooden door behind, security is a big deal because of the area they're in. If you get just outside the gates, it's pretty poverty. More poverty than, you know, you or I. This is, there again, looking at one of the family dorms, I call them dorms or apartments. They run from 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms, depending on the size of the family, you know, for how big an apartment they get. This is the building that we stayed in. The Gringos, and I laughed because they were just like all the other apartments, except guess what? The bedrooms were air conditioned. The Gringos are spoiled. So anyway, if you notice there again, the security as far as bars on the windows and the heavy metal exterior doors, and then there is always a wooden door on the inside. Most of those locks have 3 lock systems on them for security wise. There again, these people, they steal out of necessity to survive. It's not like out of want or desire. I mean, a lot of it is just poverty, and they're trying to survive. Going through your trash, Jack told us that they'd even stole laundry off the clotheslines in the back. So you can't put anything out that it could possibly, you know, sprout wings. Even though it's not real valuable, it is to them. And one of the main goals, and I didn't realize this so much because, like I said, I went down a well. This was my focus, is that to make these people walk into a new apartment and feel comfortable. It was a big goal. And we had a couple of gentlemen that came down from Tennessee to work, and every year they take at least a week's vacation, 3 or 4 of them sometimes, and they come down to work on the campus to help prepare the apartments and get them ready for the new class of students. There's a short window there to do that. Well, they told us there was lemon trees on the compound. So we picked some lemons and brought them back to Ruth. And, here, Ruth, make some lemonade. Well, after she got to making lemonade, and these lemons were tree ripened. And I don't know if you've ever, any of you have had fresh squeezed tree ripened lemonade or not, but it doesn't take a lot of sugar. But it's got the best flavor that you would believe. So Ruth got a new job. She got a chief lemonade maker because the students, as they would come by, we would offer them some refreshment. And when they would drink that lemonade, they would just, yeah, man, that's great. So they kept, when they found out where the lemon trees were, they kept almost daily bringing bags of lemons by for Ruth. So she would always have lemonade made for them. I put this picture in because, like I told you, Jack recruited me to weld. That was my focus and goal and ambition. I took a bag of tools down there that I thought was going to put my luggage overweight. Almost did. But, you know, Jack's main word in doing mission work is flexibility. Don't ever go on a trip. And this is a word to the wise. Predestined of what's going to happen. Because guess what? That ain't it. And Rick helped me come up with this. I said, man, he threw me a curveball. And he said, we'll get a slide for that. So I went down there to build fence, plain and simple, or gates, security. This is one of the kids from the children's home. And guess what? I ended up with a paintbrush in my hand. And I don't know if you can really see, but a big old fat boy on a ladder in a corner. And if any of you know my skill level, painting is not what I do. It is absolutely, I always made the statement a paintbrush didn't fit my hand. But you know, when you realize you're down there to fill a need, and maintenance and upkeep on these apartments, and any of you who have the rental property can kind of attest to this, when you move a group of people out, there's a lot of fix-up. We did electrical, we replaced screens, we replaced glass, worked on plumbing, fixed washing machines. Yeah, that's what I did. And I was just getting over hip replacement. And I was down on my knees quite a bit. And I thought, whew. Yeah, when they handed me that paintbrush, and I had to do the course cutting it in, you know, here's a room, here's the paint, do it. And they would just leave, you know. Well, I wasn't very fast on that first room or two. By the time I got to the fourth or fifth one, buddy, I was getting over the program. I was figuring you could slang that. And the funny part about their paint is it's like whitewash. If they take a 5-gallon can of paint, they're going to make 20 out of it. They just keep diluting it down. And pretty soon, you're just like rolling water. But anyway, it was quite an experience. Of course, I did get the will. Last week I was there. There was some security we added to one of the back of the apartments. And so, yeah, I did get to pick the welder up. And I tell you what, hadn't stick welded in a lot of years. That's a learning curve, too. And using that galvanized and that light wire, it was quite a chore. But anyway, I got the weld, so it was a good thing. And it made me feel like I had went for a good purpose. This is Chippo, one of the young men that was in maintenance. Of course, he didn't speak a bit of English. But he and I developed a good working relationship. He could anticipate what I wanted and when I needed, and we worked well together. And it was a pure pleasure to get to know him. He was a graduate from the preaching school. Had his own congregation, but still worked there at the School of Americas doing maintenance and upkeep. Had no car, rode a bus for about an hour, hour and a half every day to and from the school, and then had his own congregation he was preaching in at night and on weekends and Wednesday night and everything. That yellow hat under his arm was one of my favorites. I got it in Peru several years before that. When I left it with him. This is a family that, of course, we found out right quick when the students started arriving. Jack said, when the students get here, it doesn't matter what time, you drop everything you're doing and you go meet and greet. And, of course, we had the apartments all finished and ready and waiting for them. So before they would go in the apartments, we'd all gather on the porch, take pictures, hug, and welcome them to their new home. And this family was from Colombia. Their son and daughter were 15 years old and twins. So it was quite an... And this is the inside of their apartment. As they walked in, Jack wanted everything fresh, new, as comfortable as it could get. All these dishes and glasses and pans are all brand new, never been used. They set them up so that they have all new stuff every year. The stove is used. We clean everything, make sure it's all working well. And then in the center picture there, there's a washing machine. It's not familiar with some of these people. They have not had a lot of the convenience we have. This one is a brand new washing machine. Don't have dryers. Don't need dryers down there. Hang them out. It'll be good. Unnecessary expense. And then, of course, the other picture there on the far side is the dining room and part of the living room. Like I said, everything's fresh, clean. New ceiling tiles, whatever it needed. You know, we cleaned and spiffed and, spit shined everything to make them feel right at home. This is a view from the up toward the school offices, down toward the children's home. And this looks like a pretty big building. And it's pretty good size, really, for all the kids. This is actually a picture I took. The other one was off their website. This one I took. And the reason I took it was because of the flowers. Here we are down there in last of January. Things are still green and blooming, you know. When we left up here, it had snowed the week before, you know. Anyway, I enjoyed that picture. This is the playground that a gentleman passed away and left them a pretty good piece of change. I don't know the amount, but Jack said it did not come out of their standard budget. This was a luxury for these kids. And they built this new playground because he had designated the money for that. The kids there at the children's home use that. And then, of course, all the kids at the preacher's kids got to use those facilities, too. It was kind of a multi thing. There's one of the children. Oh, man. They'd steal your heart in a minute. And they were a clingy bunch because you think about these kids. And Rick didn't realize this, but when the government brings these children to our children's home, they are wards of the church. They're never to be adopted out. We have them for their life or till they grow up and become mature and can move on. That's just the way it's set up down there. And we had ice cream. And this was a big, big treat for these kids. And this is why we had ice cream. Doug and Dwayne, like I said, they're from a congregation there in Tennessee. And they come down every year, like I said, to do whatever Jack needs to be done. They come down there ready to go to work. You know, the maintenance, upkeep, they poured concrete. You know, the jack of all trades, they just do whatever. But one of their traditions is to buy two big tubs of ice cream and take it over to the children's home for the kids. And they knew what's coming. And, oh, man, it was quite a night. Enjoyed that very, very much. This is a pair of the house parents. He is also a graduate from the preaching school. He preached out in the area for a while there in Panama and then has come back to be him and his wife, house parents for some of the kids there at the children's home. This is another one of the house parents. And we put on there that the kids are wards of the church. Valdez is responsible for them. They go to public schools. Like I said, they're full of life, as any kids would be. This is some of their sleeping facilities and some of their dorm rooms. Some of it's pretty neat, and yeah, some of it's not. There again, this little young man fell in love with my wife's water bottle after she got done with it, and he played with that thing for hours. It's amazing how they learn to occupy themselves. And this is just an overview of some of the kids there at the children's home. This is a picture of the congregation where they meet there at the Bible School of America. They use this as a multi-purpose building, but they use it for their preaching services and everything there. This is a congregation where Jack's, I call him my second in command. He preaches or teaches there at school, and he has a congregation there in Panama City. We got to go visit that congregation and visit with them. And this was one of our good surprises. We had several, believe me. But there's Rosie. Bob and Kay had the privilege, well, they'd been on a trip to Panama before, and they got acquainted with Rosie. She come and stayed with them for about a month. And we ran into her at this congregation and got reacquainted. And we had met and had supper with them. She'd picked a couple desserts, Panamanian desserts, for us. And it was fun to reunite our friendship. And got to meet her daughter also. And plus, she took us back to the canal. Ruth and I wanted to see the old canal. We went to Cologne. This was another one of our surprises. Went to Cologne. This is Big Sarge's congregation. I know many of you know him. He preached a gospel meeting here back years ago. He was on several campaigns with us. Love the man dearly. Him and Marga, his wife there standing next to Ruth, are near and dear to our hearts. He is responsible for no telling how many Christians, how many people he taught. I remember the first trip to Peru with him, and I watched him preaching in the streets. And you see how big he is. He's 6'4", 6'8". Head above, well, Jack's a big man, but Big Sarge is bigger than him. He would stand on the corner and start preaching. And there would just be a group of people, and it just kept getting bigger and bigger. I mean, there might be, and he'd point that finger up in the sky, and you knew what he was talking about. And it really made me think of Jesus preaching in the streets, how the people would gather around him, because that's the way it was in Peru. They would gather. I mean, it just make your heart sore. And to get reacquainted, I hadn't seen Big Sarge in several years. And this was his comment. He was so proud to bring us in and show us his church, you know, that he was a part of. Getting on up in years, several physical issues. He can't go on the trips anymore like we used to. And, of course, Doug and Larry were with us, you know, in that. And this, I'm going to try this. I don't know if I can get it to work right. That was another surprise. Well, we were down there that week. School was closed. And so the instructors and stuff have a Bible camp for young boys, high school boys, and working and teaching them how to serve. Lead singing, lead prayers. And there were 70 kids there from all over Panama. And they were, they had built a bonfire. 80 degrees out. We built a fire. I was like, yeah, you got to be kidding me. You know, you're supposed to do this when it's cold. But anyway, they were going around and witnessing what they had been a part of that week. It was very inspirational to hear the boys sing and to be a part of that work also and how they were learning and studying and a whole week. And there in the church building, they had foam rubber mats, and they just rolled them out, and all the kids just slept on them. It was like camping out. You know, it was quite a bunch. And they run all over the place, all had matching T-shirts, and were really proud of them and everything. But it was a privilege to be a part of that also. This is kind of winding it down. Once again, we could not be a part of this work without you all. I can't thank you. It's just incredible to be a part. And you all are a part. If you're not physically there, spiritually you're there. And to know that we're all touching people's lives in Central and South America. And my Facebook page lit up this week as the boys graduated, these five young men that we got to know last year while we were down there. And I got sending them messages back and forth, and it was quite an honor. And to see them now accomplish the goal they set out to do 2 years ago. And if you have any more, I've got more stories. I could sit here and rattle all night. And would like to, but kind of like Paul preaching on midnight. I don't want anybody falling off the pew and hurting themselves. So anyway, I thank you. And Ruth, thank you for allowing us to be a part of that work. And through you all were reaching out with the good news. We're on our mission trip. And I can honestly say, and Harry reminded me of this tonight when I came in. He said, you know, I came when we first started coming to church here. He brought me a paper and asked me a duty assignment paper, which you all have had. And he handed it to me, and he looked at me, and I kind of shook my head like, no, I don't believe I can do that. And then I started going on mission trips. Man, how it's changed. So if you want God to work in your life, go on a mission trip. Or set a goal. Sometimes it takes a little push. And I don't mean to be pushy, but if you want me to, I'll give you one. Bob, give me a push. That first year in Peru College. Gee. Here's the water. Jump on in. It's fine. And once you learn, the first mission trip I went on, I learned this lesson. That once you realize that God is there with you, and He's not going to put anything on your shoulders you can't handle, and your family is one of the most forgiving bunches in the world. If you make a mistake, you mispronounce a word, they know it's just part of you. I mean, that's just the way it is. But as in, there in closing, in Matthew 28:19, He makes a statement, "Go, therefore, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit." That's what we're doing. We're sending these young men out, and who knows how many lives are going to be saved because of these young men that we've supported and guided through this school. And thank you for being a part. This lesson has not been one that would inspire you to convert or become a Christian. But I have and hope and pray it's inspired you to be more active in the mission field. And that does not have limitations. We're all a part of it. It's a matter of... And I remember the sign that used to be in the back hall. Thought of that the other day. And I'm not sure who put it there, but whoever did, it's not there now. If they repainted, because I looked tonight. I hadn't seen it in a while. That you're now entering the mission field. Whenever we leave this building, even when we're in this building, we're a part of the mission field. And through our talents and strengths that God gives us, we can lead others to Christ in our own way, with our own talents. Let's use them. Let's not lose them. I'd pray if someone has a need tonight, I'd pray that you'd respond to the invitation. The water's ready. We don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. I pray you'd come as we stand and sing.